Hello and welcome to The Cast of Us, a podcast dedicated to The Last of Us on HBO and brought to you by the Fan Critical Podcast Network. We are here with our deep dive into episode 8, titled When We Are in Need. Of course, on this journey, I am joined by my very loyal and most importantly, very subordinate subjects. First up is a man with a beard that could fit in amongst any cult. It's John.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, you like that? And following him is my right-hand man who will do anything I tell him to. It's little Gareth.
Hello. Excited to be here.
They're my two guests this week. So,
yeah. Doing that again, are we?
You're our guest.
Yeah.
How we doing?
We're letting you talk. Letting you host. That's what we do.
I'll tell you now, hosting is not a privilege. Yeah?
You're welcome.
Okay? It's a lot of work, boys. You feel free. Mm. Step in. Be the host. Be the leader. Yeah?
Leader.
Yeah, I didn't see any hands being put up there, did I? No, that's right. How you doing over there, John? You all right?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad.
You seem in a cracking mood, so...
Yeah. Oh, look, it's one more episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
One more episode of this and then done. Home and dry. So
that is done.
Good.
Home and dry, as the Pet Shop Boys once sung.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just jump into it then, because you've already heard mine and my little Lieutenant Gareth's thoughts on episode 8. Of course, we haven't scored it. We will do very soon. Let's cross over to John in Old Blighty in London town for his score and synopsis of episode 8. Go on then, John, take it away.
Yeah. It was good, wasn't it? It was very good. You know. I have to say anything else or
no.
You just give me a score.
No? Maybe a little score. You've got to give it some of those blueberries.
No, do you know what? This week I'm not even gonna score it. Imagine that. How annoying would that be? I think it's a five bloob episode. I thought the performance of the guy that plays, is it David or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Dave. Yeah.
Brilliant. Wasn't he really good?
He's fucking phenomenal, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Isn't he really good? Seen some complaints from, probably American religious nutters, to be honest.
Cause
I know in America they're big on, you know, Christianity. Sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit here in the UK.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No religion in the UK now.
Modernised.
No. Yeah. REM sung about that, didn't they? That was them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pet Shop Boys. A few religious nutters that are like Pet Shop Boys did it as well, yeah. No religion. Go west. Because there's no religion there.
Yeah.
A few religious nutters that are like, oh, you know, why have they made it about, you know, religion? Why are they having a go at religion, saying that, you know, you've got this this Christian nutter? And it's like, you're missing the point, man.
Yeah.
He's using that, isn't he?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, he says it explicitly.
Yeah, but they just ignore that, didn't they? He was brilliant, I thought. Bella Ramsey was brilliant. I've very few complaints about this episode. There are two things that are nonsense. One's very Bond villain.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely convinced that Joel should have the strength to be able to overpower one person, feel a bit tired, and then he's just back to normal, isn't he?
Mate, I think it's the power of love.
Kind of.
As the Pet Shop Boys once sung.
Pet Shop Boys.
Yeah. Yeah. Get rid of religion. Five bloobs for me.
Oh, lovely. Delicious blueberries.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about it later on, but feels like we've got to the end very quickly. I'm not. I don't know how much of a fan I am of the fact they've done it over 9 episodes. And again, I come back to some of the stuff in episodes 4 and 5, where I'm like, rubbish. What a waste of time this has been. Definitely feels like it needs another episode in this somewhere. But this episode, very, very good. So 5 bloobs.
Lovely. Well, I'll echo that with a 5 bloob score because I thought it's a fucking fantastic episode. Watched it through 2 times now, obviously. And the thing that gets me is the performance of David, in this is way better than the game. And the game, it's fucked up, right? So I was coming into it with extremely high hopes already, yeah? And now this interpretation of the character, which treads the same sort of path, but is just way more nuanced and just so... there's just a bit more layering to his character that I thought it made him the ultimate villain. He is like... just, we'll get into his character when we go through the scene by scene and everything and talk about how fucked up he is. But he is essentially what happens if someone like this makes it 20 years through the apocalypse and gets into a position of power of sorts, which they crave and abuse to their own
use. He's the equivalent of a bloater, but he hasn't been infected.
And there you go, Gareth. He is the equivalent of a bloater. Yeah, yeah, very good. There he is. Good from you, that. But yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I thought Bella Ramsey was brilliant. I thought, you know, Joel's interrogation scene, I've been waiting for it all season. It was fucking awesome. Even if he shouldn't have the energy to do it. It's the power of love, isn't it? Once again, the power of love making him, driving him on. Pet Shop Boys. But yeah, like, I actually echo your thoughts completely, John, about, I said this in the hot take. I said it for a few episodes now. Why couldn't this be a 10-episode season? It feels...
Oh, did you say that in the hot take? Did you? Apologies. No,
I didn't say that specifically, but what I said is...
You'd like the hot take, mate.
I said there's not... yeah, you would. I said there's not enough time to wrap this up. It feels like there's no time. Like, next week's episode is 43 minutes. Now... that, to me...
it's his time. It's running out.
I'm just thinking about the things they've got to show us next week. And I'm like, how the fuck are they going to do that in 43 minutes? And make me, you know... it's still, wow. The more I think about it, I'm like, wow. There should be one more episode in this season. And maybe they should have just... you know, padded things out a little bit and give them a bit more time to breathe. I did feel this episode was 50 minutes. I felt like, I said this in the hot take, it could have been 10 minutes longer. But it's still a 5 bloob episode because the ending and the last 20 minutes are just pure chaos, pure emotion. There's just horrible things going on, visceral violence. And then there's also tender moments. And it's just brilliant. And I'm so happy that this chapter of the game got adapted so well, basically. What do you reckon, little Gaz?
This little thing, actually, I wanted to mention this because a colleague who listens said to me the other day, she was like, why do they keep calling you little on the podcast? I was like, yes, don't worry about it. It's a thing. Yeah. She's like, because you're definitely average height. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Cheers.
Is that the colleague? Is that Thumbelina you were talking to?
Yeah, is that Thumbelina? Yeah.
Anyway, she toddled off afterwards and no... she's listening, not going to name her. She doesn't exist, but you know who you are. I don't know. I think, I know what you mean. Len mentioned this in the hot take, John. He said, could have been 10 minutes longer. I said it could have been 7 minutes longer. And I think there was a deliberate choice with the show to change the emphasis of David and kind of what these scenes entail. And there's something that happens in the game that kind of doesn't happen here. And instead what we get is we get a more nuanced look at his character. And I know that we've all spoken about him when we're supposed to talk about our more general views of the episode, but it's he is phenomenal, and you know, a terrible villain or an incredible villain can make or break a film, a TV show, and evidently it can make a single episode of TV as well, because again, this show manages to bring characters in, have them exist in this world for one episode, and leave with such a lasting impact. And it's amazing. The satisfaction that you get from his demise at the end is just, I don't know how they've earned that in 50 minutes.
Yeah, you were sitting there going, go on, hit him again. He's not dead. Hit him again.
Weren't you? Like,
he's, oh, yeah.
But that's the power. Oh, I mean,
is he dead?
Never see it. It happened on camera.
Yeah. Yeah. If it actually, we'll see next week from Ellie's perspective. Yeah, it was actually a pile of tomatoes. She was just chopping the tomatoes.
He just gets up and he starts singing The Power of Love. And that, we all know, that pulls you through.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And yeah, I think that performance, that character alone is Five Blueberry worthy. And yeah, another episode that I absolutely loved. I think on reflection, there's been one episode I haven't given Five Blueberries to. And
episode 4.
I have to say, I stand by it. I've loved the journey so far. I think it's been phenomenal. Maybe episode 4 deserved fewer than 4 blueberries if I look at it as a whole. But aside from that, I can't fault it. And again, you're talking about the series as a whole and whether they've left themselves too much to do, and they may well have, but I guess the proof will be in the pudding, as they say.
It will. It will.
Next week.
It will be in the venison stew. The proof will be in the venison stew. Now, before we have...
It's a terrible pudding.
Yeah, awful. But beggars can't be choosers in the old apocalypse, John. You know?
This venison tastes very peepily.
Tastes a bit peepily, this. Before... we get into a quick little ad break and a scene-by-scene breakdown, then click a corner just to say, you know, podcast is almost over. It's almost the end of this season and our coverage of The Last of Us.
See ya.
yeah, see ya now. Anyone who has found us for the first time, welcome. Thank you for sticking with us. But if you're listening on any of our other channels that isn't Fan Critical, our main channel, that's Fan Critical, please go over and subscribe to that channel. That would be much appreciated. That is a favour that we are asking you to do. You can hear us talk about other things nonsensically, and we get distracted easily. Ooh. And all that jazz. Excellent. But it's fun. And just to say, if you want to leave us a review, that'd be amazing. And if you want to be an absolute superstar, you can join our Patreon and support us with some delicious, delicious monies. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/fancritical, and you get access to bonus content too. I want to say thanks to all our patrons. Your support obviously means the world to us. And we have new patrons to welcome into said community. Now, just to clarify, our community is not a cult like David's community.
Not yet.
But when we get a few more followers into that Patreon, there is a strong chance it could turn into one, right, boys? First of all, I want to say thanks to Bob Johnson. Thank you very much for joining the Patreon.
Johnson sound like a veteran US Army commander?
Potentially.
Bob Johnson sounds like he's either on the run from the law or he's, he's made his name up.
Okay. When I stamp on your foot,
Johnson,
and say, hello, Mr. Thompson. one of the best Simpsons moments of all time. Yes. Sorry, Bob. We love you. Thank you for supporting us. You have left us some feedback with some questions, and I'm going to reference that in our feedback section. So thank you very much. And also to say thank you to a fellow Patreon, Rudy Contreras. Now, that is also a good name.
That does not sound like a US Army veteran necessarily.
No. That's a ruddy good name. That's what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Don't be so
Rudy
Contreras.
Contreras. Yeah. Oh, that's very good.
Very good.
He sounds like the cool, like, young actor that they've cast as, like, a maverick police officer to hunt down Bob Johnson.
Okay.
So that's quite good.
So, in a way, the Patreon is turning into some sort of casting procedure for us, where we're now taking our Patreons and casting them in roles for upcoming film projects. So, excellent. Thank you very much. If you want to be part of a future Fan Critical film project, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/fancritical, like Bob, like Rudy, and sign up. It's lovely. Right, musical interlude. Then we're into the scene-by-scene breakdown.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, boys, we open with a shot of a new group, and someone is preaching biblical things to them. We see a banner that says, when we
what
are in need.
Yeah,
it's not the Pet Shop Boys.
What sort of music do they play?
When we are in need, he shall provide. That is what the banner says. A girl is, however, crying over the death of her father. They ask for a burial, but they say they can't until spring because the ground's frozen. Then the leader, David, talks with James, his right-hand man, and they go off to hunt as food is very scarce.
Mm.
Yeah. Reading Revelations 21, you know, talk about the end of the world and that. Right. I know you guys are big on your Bible passages, so I don't need to explain
big
that
time.
To you.
I bloody love time. The Bible.
The Bible.
Michael Bible.
Good. Of course,
that's what we're talking
boys,
about, right?
Yeah, of course, the father figure that is dead is, just so anyone who didn't pick this up, is actually, of course, the man that Joel killed and then who stabbed Joel with a baseball bat. Obviously,
he stabbed him with a baseball bat.
Yeah, he did. Do you know what I wrote in my notes here? I wrote in my notes, Joel stabbed Joel with a baseball bat, in brackets, John will say something about that. Genuinely. I knew you would.
I don't remember. Wasn't it like a metal pole or something?
No, it was a baseball bat that like broke, and it was the handle that sort of stabbed him.
The handle stabbed him. Why are you killing me for? It's a bloody handle.
He couldn't handle it, could he, John? That's
no. Yeah. It's not a pun if it's the same word.
Be.
No, but
could
I like it though.
At least I'm trying. Yeah. My puns have evolved like the cordyceps virus this season. So.
Yeah, normally he strikes out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that one was a home run, was it?
Not got any more, so let's just crack on. No. I was literally trying to think. Of course they can't bury him, can they, boys? Can they? Why can't they bury him?
Because it's cold. He said the ground's frozen and we're going to eat him instead. Yeah, that sounds legit. Forget about that bit. Just the ground bit, I said.
Here, have this bowl of stew.
What about that ground over there?
Good.
Anyway, we're going to have a lovely meal tonight.
And of course, for anyone who hasn't heard the hot take and is unaware of this, James, David's right-hand man, is played by Troy Baker, who was Joel in the games, which is a lovely Easter egg. And it seems throughout the ep that he questions David's leadership. We see that in this scene a little bit.
I mean, you say it's an Easter egg. Kind of tastes a bit human, actually, rather than...
This Easter egg tastes a bit people-y.
Yeah. I've got a fingernail in my Easter egg. What's this about? do you know what's interesting? There's a lot of biblical names in this episode, boys, before I bring that up. You know, Josiah.
Marco.
Marco. Timothy.
Jesus.
Jesus. James actually means supplanter.
Do you want to pass the salt, Jesus? This arm's tasting a bit weird.
James actually means supplanter, which is obviously kind of what David's kind of fearful of, that James might try and take over his leadership kind of thing. So that's interesting. Just thought that was a little interesting thing. Back with Ellie and Joel, she's trying to nurse him to health.
Wait, sorry. Sorry. The very, very common name, James, means supplanter. What?
Yes.
What context? Like that? What do you mean?
In biblical terms.
Right.
I thought you knew the Bible. I asked you that question at the start of the episode, and you have lied to me.
I thought you were talking about his Christmas hits, not the original stuff.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
they are both popular at Christmas, so I'd imagine there is a link there.
Yeah. Ellie is nursing Joel back to health. They have no food though, so she decides to go out and hunt and find some eats. She shoots a deer that scurries off injured.
Find some eats? Did you say?
Yeah, some eats, yeah.
Okay, said that.
It's in my
notes. Get some grub.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one. Unfortunately for her, the deer's carcass has found its way to David and James.
Oh, dear.
She holds them at gunpoint. David offers her medicine in exchange for the deer, and then he sends James to go get it.
Bloody elk.
There he is.
Yeah.
Is this set in the same universe as Bambi?
Maybe.
Just the beginning. It's the crossover.
Could be.
Yeah.
This is what happens off screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
After Bambi's fucked off.
I'll tell you what, though.
After Bambi's fucked off.
Yeah.
Go on.
This is good. This is a good scene.
Cali.
Isn't it? It's tense. And the first signs of like again, David in this moment comes across really well. Like you're like, fuck yeah, you kind of do want to trust him, don't you?
He's a master manipulator, isn't he?
He really is.
Making Ellie think that she's in control, but it's really him in control, even though she's got a gun pointed at him. Whilst they wait for James, David further manipulates Ellie and then reveals everything happens for a reason by explaining how a man and a girl killed one of their men. James then arrives, is instructed to give her the medicine, and then David lets her go. It's quite a creepy moment, actually, isn't it? When he's telling this story and the moment just, you know, the moment clicks so that she realizes what the fuck is going on. Just a bit too late. And his delivery here is very sinister, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The way he says everything happens for a reason. Fucking, a bit shivery.
Yeah, he's quite an unassuming looking man as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, I'm not having a go at his looks, by the way, but
having a go.
He does look like he could have been a teacher or like a librarian. 100%.
He's teaching like year 8 maths. Like, that's the limit of his abilities in the regular world. But, yeah, I mean, he's annoyed at James afterwards because he's like, have you got the medicine? James's like, yeah. Throw it to her then. And he's like, right, what medicine did you give? He's like, oh, the the superpower one, the one that gives you superpowers. And he's like, oh, yeah. You're supposed to just give her penicillin. Now we're in trouble.
What have
instantly
you done
that? Regrets that move.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple of things to mention here. He's from the Pittsburgh QZ, and that is, you know, interesting for Clicker Corner, so stick around for that later, because I thought that was an interesting little mix-up. And then also, he says he was a teacher before this happened. Now, we see things throughout this episode which make me think that he was doing horrendous things in his position before the apocalypse started. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Eating his students.
Worse than that, I think.
Like just throwing like the board rubber thing at them. Oh, why are you doing that? That's bang out of all, you evil man.
I think he is a predator of the highest nature. And
you
apocalypse
smudged my work, sir.
The apocalypse came at a time that essentially allowed him to get away with this, obviously, and then he's grown into this horrendous leader. I mean, God knows what's been going on there for the last...
He's been writing the word, like, he's been using the numbers on the calculator to do boobs. I'm like, you can't do that, you're a teacher.
Where are they getting batteries for a calculator? I suppose they could...
No, we're not solar. Teacher for...
Most of them are solar.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
They've got the little solar patch, haven't they?
Oh, that's interesting, Gareth. Thank you for that little piece of information about calculators.
There you go. That's what you're tuning in for, isn't it?
That's what you're tuning in for, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, a despicable man.
I would say, I think I prefer the idea that he sort of goes off the rails because he's put in a world where there's no consequences, I guess. Calculators, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
where's
interesting.
My calculator gone? I'm going to fucking smash your head in.
I can't spell boobs anymore.
It is interesting to think about the origins of his character, but I think there's a lot of it sort of signposted here where you're like, oh God, this guy is just awful. He was awful before this happened, and now it's even worse. So Ellie returns to Joel and administers the penicillin, or the super serum, straight into his wound with no idea if it will work. Sort of themes about faith in this episode, isn't there, boys? Sort of Ellie having faith that she's doing this the correct way, or the faith that David has that everything happens for a reason and all that jazz. The faith of his community, or the faith that Joel will even pull through this sort of situation. I thought it was quite interesting. She's
gotta
literally
have
just...
faith.
Yeah.
Sang the Pet Shop Boys.
Hey, that's my song. Oh. yeah, any more faith-based stuff?
I think that's it, really. I just thought it was interesting. Just thought it was an interesting concept, yeah.
Where are you supposed to inject the penicillin, just in case?
I was literally about to say.
So, I just watched it again with my partner Mel, who is a paramedic.
Yeah.
And I said to her, because anytime there's something medical on screen, she's like, what the fuck are they doing? I said to her, is that the right way to do it? She said, no, not really. You meant to put it in a vein. Yeah. I was like, okay, fair enough.
There's loads of his veins sticking out.
but I said, would it work? And she said, yeah, potentially. It just has to find its way into the system.
Yeah.
But not did the way Mel she would have done it.
Did Mel think it was the superpower serum that she accidentally gave him?
I did say to her, that looks like a lot of penicillin. She was like, she couldn't really tell how much was put in the syringe, but the syringe was fucking massive. Anyway. back at David's cult, he brings in the deer. Huzzah! And funnily enough, he's arrived just in time for dinner.
Is that the name of the deer, is it?
Yeah, huzzah. Mm. he's arrived just in time for dinner. A lovely bit of venison is on the menu, apparently. The little girl whose father was killed by Joel...
Got any human left? I'm not a massive fan of venison, actually.
She demands justice. And Ellie
this
and
people
Joel
taste a bit venison-y.
David then slaps her proclaims he is now her father, and then sits down with them for a lovely meal as they all eat that father without even knowing.
I think they know. Yeah. I think they know.
I think the mother knows because she was back in the kitchen, and when they bring it in, the guy is like the worst liar that I've ever seen in my life. She's like, what is that? He pauses for about 10 minutes and then goes, venison? And she's like, oh, yummy. So, yeah, she so knows human. Something's up.
No, not so, human. No. But something else. Cow.
Rabbit. Rabbit. Yeah. It looks nothing like rabbit, for fuck's sake.
How big was this rabbit? Oh, yeah. There's a few of them knocking about.
Yeah.
I think he actually said Vince, and we just heard venison.
Yeah, but that was the name of the rabbit.
Did you think this is extremely fucked up? Like, he's watching them, this little girl, eat her own dad for dinner. It's a bit bizarre, isn't it? And he's clearly...
What else are you going to do, though? There's no TV.
What? This is entertainment for him. So, this is a good show tonight.
I mean, think about the contrast between Silver Lake and... what's it called?
Jackson,
Wyoming. Man.
Yep. There are ways to survive that aren't horrendous. And Jackson is the beacon at the moment of that. I also thought, like, the way he obviously manipulates her into taking his hand, and then the things he says to her, he's obviously grooming her as well. Like, just disgusting. Obviously leading up to what he's going to do with Ellie, or he's trying to do with Ellie. Were you getting any Scott Tenenbaum South Park vibes when feeding the father to the kid?
Well,
no.
The greatest episode of all time. The greatest episode of all time of South Park.
It didn't instantly remind me of South Park, no. For a start,
okay.
David himself has the biggest bowl of the lot. Like, he has more than anyone else. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. I looked at the size of his plate. I was like, oh my God. Yeah, he's been out hunting all day, Gareth. God.
Yeah. I mean, just because he's, you know, a bit, only a little bit of a wrong'un, as we say in the UK.
Oh my God.
He's still going to be hungry, isn't he?
Yeah.
I will say, why is it in that stew? Like, I mean,
what do you mean?
It just looks shit, didn't it? Like, at least make it look good.
Wait a minute. Are you saying their stew looked shit?
Yes.
It looked fucking fantastic.
No, I don't think so.
I love a good stew.
I don't even recall them. I don't recall it being in the bowls. It's when they was making it. I was like, it just looks rank.
Oh, yeah, it looks rank enough. But in the bowl, it actually looked quite nice. Like, I was like, if this is a dinner you're eating 20 years into the apocalypse, I thought it looked pretty good.
I mean, I wasn't ready to give it as much of a chance as you did.
Yeah.
I'm just
gobbling it down and going, that's right, actually.
They do say the first bite is with the eyes, don't they? So
they do.
The presentations are right.
Yeah.
I think they took that out, didn't they? They don't want to make it too obvious.
Good. Let's get that. The next day, Ellie then sees David and the others approaching their hideout. She gives Joel a knife, tries to wake him up, and then attempts to lead the hunters away. James shoots her horse, killing it, catapulting her forward and knocking her unconscious. As he is about to execute her, David steps in and carries her back to his little camp.
Yeah, what a hero, isn't it?
Oh, well,
saved her
in
life.
A way, he did save her life there, but it's...
So he's not all
very,
bad.
No, well, this is interesting. It's for a very obviously horrible reason to keep her as like some sort of trophy wife thing, which we'll get our head round later. But do you think that James here, played by Troy Baker, who is Joel in the games, do you think that he is trying to kill her because he knows what David is like and is trying to just... give her an easy out?
Nah.
I think it's interesting. I think there's something in that.
You're associating qualities to his character because he was the actor that played Joel and did the motion capture for Joel in the game. You want him to be better than he is.
And he has sympathetic eyes.
He does. He has got very sad eyes, Troy Baker.
Felt bad for him, but no.
In a way, yeah.
No.
Okay.
I think it's entirely selfish.
He's standing there watching Pedro Pascal rake it in by just lying down for most of the episode.
three episodes in a row.
Ridiculous.
I wonder if Pedro's on a full paycheck for episode 7 and 8, where he's just literally laid there for most of it.
Definitely.
It's like when Cersei in the final season of Game of Thrones was getting paid like, I can't even remember, $1 million per episode or $2 million per episode, and she was in like a cumulative 7 minutes or something across the whole season. It's like, what the fuck?
What 7 minutes though, eh?
I don't
she
understand.
She just drank wine and it was terrible.
Game of Thrones ended after season 7, didn't it?
Ended after season 8, episode 3, and then it's done. There's nothing after that. All right, so you stop there and then you never watch on. Anyway, lots to discuss. So Joel then luckily finds enough energy to kill one of the attackers.
You know,
stabbing him in the neck.
You know that feeling when you're massively hungover but you have to get up. Like you have to get up and you have to do things and you are that unwell. That he must have been like that.
10 times that.
But 10 times worse. Yeah. Imagine.
Well, this is interesting. Mm. So Joel at like, what would you say percentage wise is at here? 5%, 10%, 15%? He's still too good for this fucker and the others, to be honest. But he did have that super serum, so
yeah, lucky.
Obviously working.
It's a bit silly though, isn't it? Like, I mean, I don't know how long they were searching that area for, but about 20 minutes ago, he was lying
20 minutes,
there. Couldn't even open his eyes.
Yeah.
And then it's like survival 20 minutes later, he's... What about the other guy? Where's his survival instinct?
Yeah, well, not as good as Joel's. But what I will say is...
He's shit, yeah? He's a slug.
He's a little fucking cult slug. Jesus Christ.
a slug with no personality.
David, help me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. David, I'll give you my children if you help me. Fuck off. He deserves to die. Anyway. He incapacitated the other two who were searching and then starts to brutally torture them into telling him where Ellie is before he then violently murders them. Now, and this feeds into what we were just talking about. How does Joel have the energy to do this? And the answer, we talked about it briefly in a hot take, is because Ellie is now his family and Joel will do anything. He goes full fucking beast mode for his family. Running on fucking fumes here. He is brutal in this scene. And the reason I was looking forward to it is because it is so fucked up in the game. And it's pretty much exactly the same here in the show. And I'm so happy they kept it as violent as it is. Did you like it, John? As a Shonley?
Yeah, it was good. It was good, wasn't it? Mash him up, isn't it?
Mash him up, blood.
Yeah. Oh God. So I'm glad that's been recorded now, because I'll snip that.
Edit it out.
No, you won't. I'm going to keep talking about it, so it's impossible to. It was good. It's clearly going to lead into maybe even the next episode. You know, or lead into something that there's a theme that cracks on into season 2. And we saw or we see elements of that later on in this episode with Ellie. Mm-hmm. There are consequences to everything that you do.
There are.
So, yeah, it was good to see. Could they have made it a little bit more horrific? Because I feel like there was a level of sympathy that you feel for the young kid that's killed in episode 4 that's kind of missing here a little bit. I know, you know, they're villains, right? But it's like, come on.
Yeah,
you can still portray Joel as like you could turn around and go, no, yeah, I get it, but it's a bit much, mate. Like, why have you cut his head off and you're dancing around a bit naked? Like, you're too far, man, honestly. Yeah.
I think they've kept the violence to a... they've only shown it to us when they need to, and we've talked about this, how they've scaled it back. However, with this scene, I feel they were just as violent as the game, which is saying something, because I think it is... even in the game, you've done terrible things, like but then you see this moment and you're like, fucking hell, Joel is fucked up. What must he have done to get to this point? And this interrogation scene was seeded earlier in the season with the two people at the cabin, where he's like, you know, your wife's marked where this place is. But this is the way him and Tommy did it. And like you said, it will be alluded to more in future seasons, I'm sure. Let's crack on, because Ellie wakes up in David's butchery cage. David tries to persuade her to join him and his cultish community. He says that he understands her and that he was like her before the Cordyceps set him free. He then reveals his true intentions, and Ellie plays along before breaking his fingers and proclaiming to tell the others her name is Ellie and she is the little girl who broke his fucking finger.
Yeah, I mean, but this is what I was talking about earlier. It's too, like... I am evil and this is my plan and I'm going to, you know, tell everyone, not just you, Ellie, but the people that are watching, just for clarity, although some of them still think I'm some kind of weird Christian. There was enough in that scene, there's enough in their interactions for it to be a little bit more subtle than it ends up being. So as much as I enjoyed it as a whole, I was still a bit like, some of it felt a bit like cheap and a bit on the nose.
That's interesting. What do you think, Gareth?
Most of it was in his neck rather than his nose, wasn't it? do you know, when John said it at the start, when you were giving your little blueberry review, that was the first time I'd thought about that. And it is a little bit Bond villain-esque. Does he need to reveal his big plan? Probably not. Like, could it just be that he says, look, I don't want to kill you. That's a last resort. Like, I've saved your life and I want you to join us and come and eat people. I mean, venison with us. And that's the only sell that there needs to be. He could even say, like, look, we'll try and save Joel and look after him, for him to sort of make out that he's, I don't know, he's a little bit sort of comic book. Imagine what the two of us could do together if we just joined Star Wars, forces. You know? Yeah.
Just a bizarre. I don't think you talk to people like that, do you?
Well, the interesting thing about this character, and this is the only way I agree with what you're saying, like he maybe goes a bit strong here, but I think he realizes that Ellie is a very strong-willed individual, and his usual form of manipulation, which is the slower burn, is just not going to work at all. So he goes for broke, realizing the worst outcome is he just kills her, right? Which is what's going to happen. The best outcome is she buys it and his ultimate form of manipulation works to turn her into his plaything, essentially. So that's why I think it works for this character. And I like the way that his character starts off as, like, people who don't know the game will be questioning, like, oh, he seems all right, like with the medicine and everything. And then slowly, layer by layer, he gets peeled back to then to be revealed the fucking devil, essentially. So I think it works, but I do get where you're coming from as well. It's interesting here that this is where you mentioned about people believing that he's Christian, John. He literally says here, if you didn't catch it, dear listener, he says here that he's using religion because it's what these people need as a form of control. And if anything, he sort of idolizes the fucking Cordyceps virus for its ability to cleanse the world. So he's like full sort of cultish, but just using the Bible because he thinks that's what these people need to hear, you know?
Yeah. I mean, That is, yeah, it's literally what he says. He worships the cordyceps. He does, in a way. He wants to emulate what the cordyceps does. He doesn't care about God. He has no interest in that. He just knows that that's what these people in this moment are desperate for.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of something to hold on to, something to give them hope.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
this is happening for a reason, and he's able to fill that void, that gap that people have, and use it to his advantage.
Definitely. And I think if anyone had any doubts, I don't think anyone does at this point, but if they did about Bella as Ellie, the way she delivers the line, you know, tell them Ellie's the little girl who broke your fucking finger, is incredible. It is so on point with Ashley Johnson from the game. That it's just incredible. I loved it. I loved it so much. And yeah, I just think her casting has been very inspired, actually. Especially the last two episodes. I think she's been fucking fantastic. So well done, Bella, really. And I think we've all been won over by her, haven't we? So
no.
I think we were on board from the trailers, weren't we?
Yeah, I think we were a bit skeptical, but we were on board. But yes, we were about to jump off the train, but now we're fully on the train and we're in first class having a lovely dinner.
Oh, excellent.
It's my lovely.
Tastes a bit venison, this actually.
What's that eyeball?
Don't look at that.
Vince the Rabbit.
Oh, he's looking at me.
Waiter. No, okay. Joel then arrives at the town amidst a semi-blizzard, discovers Ellie's backpack and lots of hanging dead bodies being carved up to eat. They were grim. Mm. They were fucking grim. There is something about, and there is this scene in the game, which we'll talk about later.
Well, you said it looked delicious earlier.
Yeah, that was off camera. That was off microphone. Yeah. Don't tell the listeners that.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah.
That's a Patreon only bonus to know about my feelings about hanging meats. But no, genuinely, there is something very disconcerting. It's very horrific seeing human bodies, you know, decapitated and like hung up that way to eat. Yeah. It's not good, is it?
I don't care.
No, I agree. I agree with that bombshell.
That's good.
That you've,
That's a fair point.
Listening to this and going, yes.
I'm just checking. It was a test. You both passed. You both also creeped out by it. So
yeah. I just thought of one from earlier. It'd be like, waiter, there's a hare in my soup. And no, sir, that's rabbit. Because the rabbit in the soup.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Oh,
I mean, you could have gone
with
there's an eye in my soup as a play on fly, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
That works
well.
Too.
So, do you want me to edit that out and put it earlier, boys? tell me.
No, I'm
joking.
No, I reckon just put it before the bit that you claimed a dead body being ready to eat is somewhat uncomfortable.
Somewhat uncomfortable. I said extremely uncomfortable, Gareth, so we'll move on. Anyway, disgusting.
I'm not sure this is right, listeners.
Something not quite right
about
this guy.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm not sure I love David as much as I thought I would.
Guys, I think he might be a bit dodgy. At the same time, speaking
a
of David...
A bit dodgy.
Him and James pin Ellie down and are about to chop her up into tiny little pieces. Ellie bites David and then says she's infected. He doesn't believe it. She rolls up her sleeve, shows him the bite, and in the confusion grabs the cleaver and slams it into James's throat, killing him. John, if you had listened to the hot take, which I know you didn't because you've fucking not done your homework.
Busy, mate. I'm busy. What do you want me to do? I watched the episode, sort of.
Fair enough. I said that this is kind of a bit of a meta, you know, Ellie actually killing Joel because Troy Baker is Joel in the games. I thought it was quite a little funny little turn of events.
Yeah. Well, I mean, funny. And that happens in season two as well, doesn't it? That Ellie actually kills. Oh, you're supposed to.
Don't tell anyone that. No.
Imagine.
Everyone, there's no spoilers here. John doesn't know fucking shit because he hasn't seen anything. He hasn't played the games. So you just don't listen to a word that John
says. I know eating humans is wrong.
He does know that eating humans is wrong. So that's something.
Tasty, but wrong.
Ellie then escapes into the diner where she throws a burning log at David, which then starts to send the place up in flames.
Right.
With the fire burning, Ellie hides and then leaps out.
So John's got his hand
David.
Up.
I know. Go on.
No, but I just need to say this. Look, one.
Okay, go on.
If you're going to pick up something, I mean, it was a bit of a weird thing to pick up anyway.
Yeah.
I understand the desperation. But, I mean, it's smoking, isn't it? You're going to give away your position. Imagine that. Imagine holding a smoke signal and then hiding behind your table and going, ooh, I wonder if he's going to see me. I was watching it like, oh, fuck off.
Where and are you, Ellie? I've left. I've just gone to the shops.
Yeah. Oh, she's gone to the shops. So then she froze it. And then obviously, I mean, it looked like there was a bit of rubbish CGI there. I'd have to go and watch it back.
It's good. Weirdly. I double checked. I double checked it, John, because you know I'm all over that shit. It's good. It's good.
But you double checked it because originally you were like, that looks a bit weird, that.
Yes, that is also what I did. But I double yes, on the second correct. Watch through, it looked good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but that's because you watched it like behind your hands, or you were too busy gobbling up a lovely bit of human. Part of me just thought she should just run into the room and just set it alight with that stick. Just get to that bit like that.
Okay. All right, interesting. Well, let me continue my narration. Ellie hides and then leaps out, stabbing David before being knocked to the ground by him. He then says he isn't going to kill her, and what he's going to do is much, much worse. As he's about to do it, Ellie grabs the cleaver and repeatedly strikes him over and over Jesus. And over and over and over, turning his head into mush.
Mm.
Okay, where the fuck do we start here?
Mush.
Do we see him in fire? The end? I can't remember.
No, okay, fine.
Good.
It's so much you don't see it, which I really like. I mean, we've talked about it. It's an off-screen death, so he might be back. Who knows? But the fire, which I thought looks fucking cool, makes David seem like the devil in hell. Very symbolic. She's literally trapped with the devil, which I thought was pretty good cinematography. There's a couple of shots in here, especially just before she's going to stab him. I believe we used it as our Instagram promo image where he's silhouetted in the flames in the background.
Yeah, we did.
It's a fucking brilliant shot. That it is amazing. And the performance.
And little horns as well.
Yeah.
You see the little horns out of his head? No, genuinely.
It's a very Stephen King The Stand kind of image in my head, actually. What do we think about Bella's performance here?
The
house is burning.
Go back to that.
Her performance is incredible here, no?
It peaked for me afterwards. The interactions with Joel, that hyperventilating, struggling to get her words out, I thought was amazing. Genuinely, teared me up a little bit because... What?
If you'd listened to the hot take.
Yeah, but he doesn't listen to the hot take, Gareth. We've learned.
I've missed one hot take. Fuck's sake.
That's the best one.
That
and
we
I skip this one. I skip this one because he slagged me off in the last one. I was like, well, I'm not interested anymore. Cowards.
Well, maybe you should have a listen to this one.
Don't listen to the last one.
That genuinely teared me up. You know, I think of whenever my daughter's, you know, crying. And kids are stupid, aren't they? Cry about nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, that's my sandwich. You've literally just eaten. Like, why are you hyperventilating? but that was a touching moment. I'd loved it.
I said the exact same thing. And Joel's line of like, it's okay, baby girl. Oh, set me off. I couldn't deal.
And it's, we talked about this as well, John, and for anyone who hasn't heard the hot take, that is a very important line from the game. Probably in the top three, sort of, there's a lot of quotes in this. There's one coming next week. that are the most memorable.
Human's tasty.
And it sort of mirrors his holding of Sarah when she died. When he's like, it's okay, baby girl, it's okay. And Sarah obviously dies. And Ellie has survived. And it's the contrast of these two characters. Two girls that are completely fucking different. But both Joel is now their father. And this is the moment where Joel cements himself as Ellie's father. And yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff. And obviously, you know, like you're saying, having kids and that, and you just want to protect them. And that is the thing that Joel was afraid of the most, is that he would lose something that he cares so much about. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is, I know, like, obviously, it's a line from the game, but personally, I played the game like 10 years ago, but I can tell you that that line would not have had anywhere near the impact. And it just made everything that happened, and it makes me willing to let go of that minor criticism that John brought up, which is totally fair. You know, how realistic is it that he would be at the level of health required to go through what he did? But you know, like, you would do anything. And like, I think parents kind of, it seems to happen a lot, they find superhuman strength when needed to defend their children. No, and we would do that as well. Like, you would find it somehow. And
you said you wouldn't even get up if you were hungover. No, you...
Good point.
Yeah, I'm not talking about being hungover.
You can eat tomorrow.
I'm not talking about being hungover, obviously, but you know,
good point.
It's a beautiful, understated moment as well. Like, there's nothing over the top about it. It's brilliant,
and a great way to end the episode. But of course, that is not the end of our podcast, because we have Clicker Corner and listener feedback coming up. But first of all, let's go to that Clicker Corner, baby. It's not as good a Clicker Corner as usual.
Oh,
because
good. Everyone switch off.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Just skip forward 5 minutes. No, I'm joking. There's some good stuff in it. Bye. Just not as good as usual. So Pittsburgh QZ, which is where David says he's from. And that is interesting, because we've talked about this in previous podcasts, that Pittsburgh is actually the location where Kathleen and that lot were. Not that Kathleen's in the game, but where that segment of the game happens. And they changed it out for Kansas City. And that was very interesting. There's lots of reasons for that, to do with where they were shooting and what it looked like. So they've got the Pittsburgh reference in here instead, saying that David came from Pittsburgh. And what is interesting about that is the band of hunters that we see in Pittsburgh, we do come across bodies that have been chopped up and prepared to be eaten in Pittsburgh. So they're kind of saying he comes potentially from this group that was essentially cannibalistic in survival, which is very interesting. We've talked about Troy Baker as Joel. I thought his performance was actually pretty good here as James. Apparently he just didn't have the right look for Joel, which is completely understandable. You know, he's very tall and just has a different sort of, you know, he's
a
folky
banjo
guy, yeah.
Player in a folk band, isn't he?
Exactly. But I'm happy that he got a role in this, and I'm happy that he is fucking fantastic as a video game actor. He's done loads of games now, ranging from Uncharted, you know, lots of Naughty Dog products.
He's not listening.
He might be. You're fantastic, Troy. I really love your work. The bow and arrow. Now, you're saying, what bow and arrow? And that's right. What bow and
what
arrow?
What bow and arrow?
Bow and arrow.
Yeah, exactly.
What bows and arrow?
In the game, and you'd have liked this, Gareth, Ellie hunts, obviously, with a bow and arrow, and she's a great shot. And it's a running thing that runs throughout both games. And they seem to have gotten rid of the bow and arrow for the show for some reason. Now, I don't know why. Maybe it's just easier. But I hope we get to see the bow and arrow in the future. Because let's face it, you're not going to be using ammo every time you go out. There has to be other ways of hunting, you know?
Wait, so that was your reference to the bow and arrow?
Yeah, that's not
in it. It was in it. It was in it last the week before last week. Whenever it was in
A guy used it, but not Ellie.
No, I know, but we saw it. We saw it as a close up.
Yeah, but I want her to use it. She hunts the deer with the bow and arrow in the game, and it's a very, actually, I will say this, a very annoying sequence that you have to play in the game, because you have to like stealth, and John hates this shit. But you have to like stealth, and when I say stealth, you have to move so fucking slowly to not spook this deer. On my latest playthrough that I just did, my sixth playthrough, honestly, man, I was on this segment for like 15 minutes because I was so fucking impatient.
You anyway. Two are, you both of you are impatient, and it's why you'd be terrible hunters. So,
well, and we don't like killing animals. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Blood first, just people. That's prefer to eat human just beings eating instead, people. Whereas you're out there killing animals. Horrible person.
Exactly. Ellie and David in the game, when they're waiting for James to get back with the medicine, they're actually attacked by a fucking horde of infected. And I'm talking like, I don't know, 30 infected, a couple of clickers, and a bloater. So it's a fucking crazy sequence, and you're building trust throughout this sequence. And obviously we've talked about it, though, that in the show they can't do that, because then the infected lose all of their sort of, I don't know, sort of mystery and the sort of horror that they bring, you know, seeing them less and less. And then when you do see them, it's way more impactful. Yeah. So I think that was a good decision.
I've put here. It's a budget thing, though, surely.
Of course, a budget thing, you know, but let, you know, there's no horde in the section of the, oh, there is actually.
I think it's also a narrative decision. I think they substitute that out for some more people. Character development.
Yeah. Good. No, I think you're right.
It's just not a David lot of boss, them, like in the whole series. I'm assuming we'll get none next week. So, I mean, yeah, been a threat, I guess, in three episodes.
I've seen a preview. There is one next week. There is one next week.
Yeah, but is he on a poster?
Yeah. And lastly, the David boss fight in the game, and it is a boss fight, has you stealthily like hiding around the diner as it's burning, and you have to find moments to stab him. And I thought they did a fantastic job of replicating that in a believable way that wasn't a shit video game adaptation. It just worked, and I thought it was really cool. How they essentially kept the same mechanic in the show and the game. So I thought that
I guess
was fantastic.
The only downside with having a fire, and this, I mean, they've got to because it's in the game, and also it creates a little bit of like peril and it makes it time sensitive. I guess you kind of miss out on those like quiet, kind of heavy breath moments that you could get if someone's hiding.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess we already had that with when they're in the museum in episode two.
Yeah, that's right. Nice. Yeah. Good point, John. And now, of course, it's time to move on to your feedback, dear listener. And we have a couple pieces today because we are running long. I will speak them now. I will read them out now. First up is
speak.
Had a few beers. First up is our lovely new Patreon, Bob Johnson. And he says, hello. I hadn't considered Riley going to Atalanta as a Walking Dead Easter egg, but I saw shortly after the episode
Atalanta.
Storm Reed was...
gone to Italy, yes. Has she?
Sorry. Atalanta.
Sorry. Atlanta, sorry. But I saw shortly after that Storm Reed was born in Atlanta and thought that that's why they gave it a nod. So maybe it was a bit of both. It was very interesting there, Bob. I like that. And then... he's also asked us a question. If it isn't too much of a spoiler, can someone explain the evolution of the infected? I was confused as to why the infected was in the mall and what was causing him to be dormant, for lack of a better word. Thank you very much, Bob. So, very interesting question, because the infected have kind of changed in the show from the game. However, we have said, Bob, that there are four types of infected. You have your runner, you have your stalker, then you have a clicker, and then you have a bloater. Your runner is someone who's just been bitten, and they can be that way, you know, a bit crazy, running around, trying to bite other people for quite a long time.
A bit crazy.
The
crazy guy.
The Stalker is actually what I believe the one in the mall was, which is one that has essentially is on the way to being a clicker. They haven't lost their sight yet, but they sort of lurk in the shadows and they are very fucking annoying because you can't ever hear them. You don't ever see them coming. During the second game, they're fucking terrifying as well. And what I will say is that they've changed the cordyceps virus in the show so that it's a bit more like they're all connected and stuff. And this idea of the bodies being fused into the wall is why he was dormant. He was sort of in a bit of a metamorphosis stage, I think, on the way to being a clicker potentially. And he is just sort of halfway between being an infected and a clicker. So that's my take on it. Do you have anything to add to that, boys, or?
No.
No, I think it's like, broadly speaking, it's time based, and you know, if they go undisturbed for long enough, but it's an imperfect science, right, isn't it? It's like, you know.
Yes. And even with the lore of the game, it's I still think there are gaps that there's gaps in there that are open to interpretation. I don't think it's as black and white as it just goes in that order. And there's things that happened in the second game which definitely make you question that. So it's interesting. Terry has written in. Thank you for that, Bob, by the way.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I was hoping Bob's question would be, if you had killed someone and you were on the run from the law and you had to get a passport with a fake
name.
Would you trust a guy called Rudy? Rudy Contreras.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Great names. We said it. Once again, great names. Thanks, Bob. And we hope that you do escape.
You got nowhere to go, Bob.
Now, my name's Rudy, goddammit. Okay. Next up, Terry's written in and has had this to say. Love your podcast and thought I'd send in a few thoughts. Only on second watch did I catch that the chef woman is the mother of the cult teenager. Puts an extra touch to her reaction when the meat is brought in later, which we did reference in the episode there, that she sort of was like, what is it? And he's like, venison. Goes on to say, are these guys really just terrible hunters? They're starving to death and eating each other, but Ellie gets a deer and sees other wild game her first day of trying. David missed her with 3 shots from 3 feet away as well. Good point.
Yeah,
I don't think they're very good. I don't think they're very good hunters.
James takes out the horse pretty skillfully.
That's true. He does. That was a very good shot. I do think they're a bit useless. Obviously, Ellie has learnt from the best. She has learnt from Joel, and Joel is the best. So,
yeah.
Next up,
says, like, how much time have they been together at this point? Like, they've been in the wilderness for like months now, haven't they?
That's true, and she's probably watched him multiple times. But he's right, there was a lot of game. It's but really cool to rewatch after knowing they all know who she is from the first encounter. James's look when he's sent for medicine is particularly good. It's interesting to see David's thinking change. At first, he presumably would assume it's a dad-daughter situation, and he tests that by referring to Joel as her dad a few times, but she doesn't respond. David calls him her friend when she's in the cell. If he reads her reaction as confirming that, he must be thinking she's capable and teamed up with an older man. He would probably assume the worst, and that's exactly what he's looking for. So I thought that was an interesting take.
Oh, I like that. That's very good, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very good.
Good analysis. No,
way better than what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Well, that kind of answers your question, Terry, John, about why he was so forthright with his intentions.
Terry, do you fancy hosting a podcast next week? Because
don't do it, Terry. It's a lot of work. Anyway, next up. Finally, for people that are theoretically in constant peril of being attacked by zombies, they are insanely susceptible to the sneak up from behind unheard move. Joel pulls it off here 3 times. Once on Ellie. Ellie pulls it off. James does. In this episode alone.
Special move, though, isn't it? Drama.
It's like Riley last week trying to scare Ellie awake. Made no sense. He says, anyway, love your banter and discussion. The most of all of the Last of Us pods. Can't wait for the finale.
There are others?
Thanks very much. There are other pods.
Why are you listening to other ones?
No, thank you, Terry. And
imagine telling your wife, going, do you know what? Of all my wives, you're my favourite one. Wives? Yeah.
Good point.
Unbelievable.
Thanks, Terry. Lovely, lovely words. And of course, you can write in like Terry, like Bob, like Rudy, and you can go to patreon.com/fancritical or write in at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com. So whichever way you like to do it, that's where we are. The links are in the show notes, people. Say it every week. And support this season has been fantastic. So thank you very much. And that is it for the deep dive of The Last of Us Episode 8, titled When We Are in Need. Of course, next week is the season finale. It is over next week.
Finito.
43 minutes of runtime. You know,
is that definitely confirmed? Do we know? I know I was the one I've heard it up earlier on in the season.
No, but I checked it out after you said it, and it was, I saw an article saying the same thing. So I'll be very interested to see. But next week, that is it. 43 minutes left of this season, and we will be here, of course, to cover it with a hot take and then a deep dive. And then we'll probably do a season wrap-up as well, because we've loved this show so much. I want to say thank you to...
We've not discussed that, have we? Or...
Dropped you in it now. We're doing it. I want to say thank you to my two loyal subordinate weasel subjects, John and Gareth. Thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Eating people with me and going through these hard times. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
And that's nice it. We'll catch you next week. Go hunt some game, or worst case, eat some people. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Endure and survive.
Nice to eat you.
Awful.